Today we talk about remote work and mental health. This is the Early Days Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to the Early Days Podcast, the show about the hustle, the excitement, the doubts, the success, the failures, the ups and downs of building a business from scratch. My name is Marin Gerov, your host, and together with my co-founder Julian Summerjeev, we interview fellow entrepreneurs about their experience of building businesses. Why? Because we're actually doing that ourselves. We're building our own apparel company, it's called Duloware, and we make non-iron dress shirts from performance fabrics. There's a lot more benefits and properties, but you can go to our website, wearedulo.com, and check out more about that. On today's episode, we have Joseph Pack, a serial entrepreneur who started a digital agency, then moved into healthcare before he started Pilotfish, which we're going to talk mostly about today. After having several businesses and running them at the same time, Joseph experienced a burnout, and that had a significant toll on his life and career. Eventually, he opted for the remote lifestyle and decided to build a business around the importance of mental health for remote workers. Check out more about Pilotfish at pilotfish.io and connect with Joseph on Twitter at Joseph Pax, that's JOSEPHPACKS. And now, without further ado, our conversation with Joseph from Pilotfish.
Okay, sure. Well, my name's Joe Pack. I'm from Manchester in the UK. And when I was around 20, me and a friend from the area decided to try and create a business, which then turned out to be a digital agency that worked with brands such as Adidas, The North Face, Patagonia, the NHS in the UK, Bauer Media, Levi's, many, many big brands like that. And it grew quite nicely, actually, until around 2015, when we got a contract with the NHS. So they were looking to hire they were looking to recruit clinical trial patients for new pharmaceutical drugs, and they were doing it in partnership with big charities like the British Heart Foundation and Cancer Research and Mind and loads of other similar organizations. And the way that they were doing it was they were just asking the nurses to go around hospitals in the UK and just going up to beds and saying, will you take part in this study? Will you take part in this study? And it just felt so archaic and antiquated, the process. So we said to them, we can fix this for you. We can create a digitalized version of it. And literally within a month, we had built a system that worked. I think it returned something like 1,000 times the efficiency of what they'd been doing previously. Nice. And that then became the main business.
Was it like a patient intake form or digital version of that?
Yeah, it was literally, I mean, to techies, this is gonna sound extremely simple. It was basically like our own type form that we created with a bit of automation behind it that went into a very, very, very secure database that collected a lot of information from the people that were up for participating in it so that the NHS could monitor those results on a daily basis to find the people that were actually applicable. And then to get people into the database, we just ran social media advertising, just simple Facebook advertising. And they'd not even thought about doing anything like that at all in the past. Yeah, it was crazy, really. We went from one day, you know, working with these big sports brands to then doing something that felt a lot more serious. But then we dabbled a little bit with a startup as well, which was an influencer marketing discovery startup. This was like kind of early 2015. I know that the market's absolutely flooded with software like this now, but at the time, there weren't so many around. But unfortunately, I think the immaturity of two young guys trying to start or run three businesses at the same time with employees, we just burnt ourselves out. And I got hit very, very hard. In 2016, I ended up in hospital after having five seizures in the night, which were directly related to stress. And not a caffeine overdose, but I'd been drinking around 10 espressos a day.
Well, it sounds like it.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty crazy, really. So that was a shock to the system. I just woke up in hospital one morning. I was literally like 10 minutes away from having a lumbar puncture into my spinal column to check, because they thought that got meningitis. I was so ill. it turned out that I didn't. I basically was just suffering from acute exhaustion. And then I took a month off after that, and it made me really reflect on what we'd been doing. You know, it seemed really, really successful from the outside, but it just caused me incredible mental health issues. Really, really bad.
How many people were you responsible for at the time?
Well, in the agency, there were between 10 and 15 people that we were responsible for. But then quite often we'd, the projects, because they were big projects, we could be hiring sort of like another 10, 15 freelancers on top at times. And although freelancers are obviously supposed to work independently, they need a lot of management. And we obviously had employees that could handle that, but I wasn't too keen on having people that were just managers. I'm never keen on that. I think it's important that people have a skill, like a designer or a developer, or any of the above, and spend a proportion of their time managing a very small team, say two extra people. So if there's just three people in the team, and now this is not something that I've come up with. This is what Basecamp does very, very successfully. And it's just a strategy that I'd copied. But yeah, that seems to work for me. And then we had, you know, we had a small number of employees in the research business, in the NHS business. And then the startup, we were just in partnership with another company based in the UK. So we were sharing the workload on that. But I mean, it was just constant. Really, really silly. But obviously that developed a number of mental health issues for me. And then over time, I started to realize that people that work remotely, people that work from home, nomads that travel the world, that type of person, they're not getting the same level of support that people that work from an office are getting with mental health. And as I started to dig into the research a little bit more, I realized that there was actually a problem. So funnily enough, with scratching my own itch and trying to create some form of support network for someone who works remotely, as me, I created this business called Pilotfish, which is what I'm working on right now. Pilotfish is basically a crowdsourced database of information on mental health direct from the people that are basically direct from the remote workers. So the remote workers submit some information about how they look after themselves. We then validate that with a number of partner psychotherapists that we work with very closely. And then we, at the moment, just process that information to put into a web app where people can come in. They'll say, I've got this feeling, you know, they're not going to know they've got anxiety, they're not going to know they've got depression, etc., but they're going to know they feel something. So our job is to find all of the symptoms, and then we're going to put that into a database where people can search the symptom they're feeling, and it'll automatically match them with the problem that they're facing. And then it will look at the severity of the problem, and if the problem's very bad, then it'll connect them with a vetted psychotherapist in their area. If it's mediocre, they'll have some form of remote therapy, and we're already working with partner psychotherapists to deliver that. And if it's not too bad, then basically they'll be given the option to be put into a premium community, and inside that community they'll be matched up with people that are suffering from the exact same problem, so they can have some form of reassurance. Now, to begin with, the profiles will be completely anonymous, because people don't really want to show their identity when it comes to things like this. But then they may be given the option to be more public about it later on, but I'm still not too sure about that. But the main thing with mental health, especially when it's not too severe, is people just need to be reassured that what they're feeling is actually quite normal. And the recent statistics show that 1 in 4 people on the entire planet suffer with some form of mental health issue. So the issue is huge, and it's just not being tackled well enough at the moment.
You specialize just in people working remotely, or is that because you mentioned the number of people having that issue is huge? Do you also take in people outside of that lifestyle?
We will, but none of our marketing and none of our communication will be tailored towards those people at all, because with everything that I've done up until this moment, we started small to get bigger. And I just think trying to target the entire mental health market is going to be like very, very, very difficult, especially in the early stages. So to scratch my own itch, as I've already mentioned, is to help the people that I'm involved with. So that would be nomads and remote workers, which is a hell of a lot of a smaller audience than the whole of the world. But in doing so, it validates that it works. We can do it with a group of people that I'm already involved with, which means that we can get it to market much more quickly and we can get more honest feedback. And then if it works very, very well, we can reassess as to whether this needs to go out further to the wider market. But I will be honest, actually, at this stage right now, after owning businesses with employees and things, I think I'm not really desperate to build something huge. I just want to build something that solves a problem in a small market where I don't really have to employ anyone. I can just work with partners to make that happen.
So what, in what state did you leave the other three businesses you mentioned? Then what, just a slight step back, what happened? You mentioned that reflection period. How did you decide to become a remote worker in the first place?
Yeah, well, I made the decision to sell the companies, and that was finalized in December 2017, actually right at the beginning of it. And that was just a case of selling the shares in my company.
All three of them?
It was actually technically just two, because one of them was part of the same company, if you will. Which made it a lot easier. So yeah, that's it. I mean, it's been a massive change in my life, that's for certain. But it genuinely has made me, I've gotten to a stage where I'm actually doing work that I want to be doing again after many years of kind of just being a boss and strategizing and things. And that's not, I don't think that's really for me. I think maybe 20, 25% of my working time on that is really nice as a luxury, but the rest of it, I want to be making stuff with my own hands, you know, developing things and creating businesses.
How does your day look like today with Pilotfish?
Say that again, sorry.
How does your day look like today?
Okay, today, well, normally I try and write a to-do list by hand the night before, because the reason with that is I want to make sure that I'm getting into the flow of work first thing in the morning without having to strain my brain at all. So I'm just looking at the to-do list. Oh, there's a task. And the first task will probably be something related to writing, something where I used my clear mind in the morning to do that. So I write a newsletter. We have a podcast, which is called the Glass Box Podcast. So I'm writing scripts for that, or I'm writing the structure of it. I'm writing newsletters, I'm writing blog posts. And then I'm looking through the information that we're crowdsourcing, and I'm discussing it with therapists, and then trying to work out how we're going to put this into better structure so it's really, really easy for people to implement the information that we're getting across. And then with working remotely, I really have got the most flexible schedule in the world. So I tend to start work some sort of like 8 o'clock in the morning, something like that. But then if I'm in Indonesia, where I was last month, I will surf. So go for surfing for an hour and a half or something like that, really, really clear my mind. And then when I come back to work again, I just feel so productive. It's almost as if I'm starting the day again. Now in Thailand, where I am right now, there isn't really any waves, which is disappointing. But I've started doing Thai boxing, and that's given me the same sort of adrenaline and buzz that I need to carry on with my working day in the afternoon. Then in the afternoon, recently, what I've been doing really is just doing a lot of outreach to remote business owners and remote employees and influential people in the nomad world, trying to get them to pay attention to what we're doing with Pilotfish, which is not cold sales outreach. I'm literally just emailing them and asking them a question related to the way that the businesses currently handles mental health for the employees. And then that opens up a dialogue, which can lead to them signing up to what we're doing. But I mean, asking them to sign up from the first email is pretty much a surefire way to fail. Because it's not very often that you ask someone to marry you on the first date and they say yes. So I try to keep that mindset. So yeah, basically that's it. That's the way that my days are broken up at the moment.
How do you go about spreading the word about Pilotfish?
So the newsletter has grown organically fairly quickly. We've got something like 1,500 people that have signed up to that now in just a 3-month period, which I'm quite happy with. And really, to be honest with you, I haven't really promoted it that much. I've promoted it through Instagram a little. That's probably given me sort of like 5% of those subscribers. Twitter, maybe another 5% or something like that. But in general, because the newsletter goes out every week and I explicitly am asking people who read it to share it with their friends that might find it valuable, I tend to get a huge amount of subscribers that come every week after this newsletter has gone out. And I think the reason for that is because the content in it's quite punchy. And if you are suffering with mental health issue and you know someone that is, then there's a very good chance that you're going to share this newsletter with someone because of the content. So how that seems to be work. Say again.
How much time do you spend preparing an issue of the newsletter?
Quite a long time. I think probably a full day a week, because research, 3 hours, something like that. I really try and do extensive research because it's of such a sensitive topic. Then the structure of the post, and then kind of go over that in my head a little bit. Then I'll write it, the first draft, really, really quickly, like dead scrappy. No, it's not beautiful text at all. Then I'll tend to go away, like go surfing or something, or, you know, go away from my desk for a couple of hours and just reflect on what I've done, come back to it, and then edit it. And then I'll pass it to a couple of people that I trust to go through it with me. They'll give me some comments back on it to make sure that I'm being descriptive enough in some of the points. And then after that, I'll schedule it to go live. So, yeah. And in fact, tomorrow. So I'll spend a good portion of the day writing the article. So it probably does take a full day of each week, but it's not necessarily all in one day because I have those periods of reflection and editing.
What is the format of the newsletter? Is it just a copy article, or do you put in some links and images or infographics?
So I started off as a curated newsletter way back, you know, in 2017. It's not that long ago, but that's when I first started it. And what I used to do was just take articles that were related to both digital nomadism or remote working and mental health together, and then I'd comment on them. And that was fine, but I realized I needed more substance in it. So I changed it to like very, very heavily researched back articles. And that's what I've been focusing on so far. So I don't put images in the emails because my experience with it is that it reduces the open rates significantly. And people much prefer reading plain text emails. There's endless studies to prove that to be true as well. And in my experience, that definitely is the case. So it's plain text. But then what I do is I reformat the article with images, GIFs, anything like that, sign up forms for the blog site within pilotfish.io. And that generates a lot more traffic that generally will bring in a few email subscribers as well.
For the software that you're using for the newsletter, is there something specific, or are you just putting it out in a really plain text in the email email client?
I was using ConvertKit actually up until maybe 2 weeks ago, but I changed to MailChimp. And the only reason why is because I was being very, very tight, and I knew I didn't really need to be paying money for my email newsletter at this present stage. And I was spending something like $30 a month on ConvertKit. So I decided to just go to MailChimp for the time being. But I'm pretty sure that I'll go back to ConvertKit. ConvertKit, although MailChimp really, really does try and push the designed emails, ConvertKit really try and push you into just sending plain text emails.
Right. Oh, that's pretty nice. I didn't know about it.
You do know about ConvertKit, did you say?
No, I didn't know about ConvertKit, actually.
Oh, really? Wow, yes. Brilliant. Very, very. I mean, they've gone from, I think literally 2 days ago, the owner just posted an article to say that the company is now doing $1 million a month in revenue. They've only been going for about 2 years.
Wow. Yeah. Shows you that a crowded space can always have a new player, and this grows quite well.
Exactly. And the reason for that is because they targeted a niche. So they only work, all of their marketing is focused solely on bloggers. whereas all the other email companies that are not doing as well as them in terms of growth rate, aside from MailChimp, are broadly just targeting everyone. And that is just so hard. And more often than not, that you just see people fail all the time when people do that. But they went, right, we're only targeting bloggers right now. So they can own the entire blogger market, which, let's be honest, is probably hundreds of thousands of people now, because everybody's trying to do it. If not tens, you know, even if it's tens of thousands of people, it's a ridiculous amount of money that they can make. And then what they'll do is, when they feel like they've exhausted that market, they can move on to others.
Yeah, that's a good point. So what is the next 6 months of your plan to build Pilotfish look like?
The next 6 months will be basically creating this database of as many tips, education and information around mental health as possible. So we will never charge for content at all. I personally have a real issue with people doing that. I think that all of the information that you need for anything in the world basically is free on the internet. And the vast majority of courses, online courses, are just basically not plagiarized, but they're just rehashed ideas of other things that are available for free on the web. And I think it's particularly bad when I see people that are doing mental health courses that they're asking people to pay for. So all of the information will be completely free, so people can come into this repository of information and find out how they can fix their problem or work on their mental health, you know, and make themselves better at their job. And then we will then look to monetize. So we'll have this huge repository of information, which we'll continue adding to, and then we'll look to monetize. Probably sometime at the end of this summer, I should think, where we will have a paid community that people can be part of. And inside that paid community will be psychiatrists that people can talk to privately. And then we'll have a network of psychiatrists that we'll work with and take a commission from all of the fees that they charge to the people that we've connected them with. So that's where we're going with it.
Okay, that's a pretty nice plan. Would you like? I think we should make a part two if you want to go deeper on the business a little bit more and some other stuff. We're a bit pressed for time sure. as well. So would you like just to mention a couple of links, handles, where people can find out more about you and Pilotfish and how they can subscribe to the newsletter?
Sure. So if you go to pilotfish.io, it'll take you straight to a page where you can sign up for the newsletter. If you don't want to do that, then you can click learn more and it'll take you through to the main website where you can get a link to the podcast. So the podcast is called Glassbox, all one word. You'll find it on iTunes, etc. I can send that link through to you in an email as well if you want to put that in the show notes. Yeah. And then on the side, I'm also starting to share the startup, like the business bootstrapping journey of Pilotfish on my website, which is josephpax.com. I'm going to be extremely open with this. I'm going to share revenue, actual revenue. I'm going to share all the things that we're doing completely wrong, which happens on a daily basis, because I think it's fair to do it that way.
Yeah.
And then hopefully just create sort of like a series of content of the journey of Pilotfish. Something that I can, more if I'm being honest with you, so that I can keep track of what I'm doing and learn from the things I'm doing wrong more than anything. But I genuinely think it's nice to share it with the community, because I'm really, really, really fond of the indie hackers and the product hunt type community. I think it's amazing, especially people that are building businesses with no investment whatsoever. So I'm really, really keen to support that as much as
possible. Yeah, I think it's becoming, it's something that we're doing also, but I see more and more people starting to do that, and there's a lot of benefits in sharing the whole thing from the beginning.
Definitely, I think so.
Definitely.
It's incredible education and a way to learn also from your mistakes, see where things go wrong or go right, and hopefully be valuable to somebody else who's deciding or decided to go on the same journey or a similar one.
Absolutely. I think it's the amount of mistakes that we make is crazy. And to hide from them is just being in denial.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay, man, let's definitely do a part two. Stay in touch. All the best. Have a great day. A bit of Thai boxing, maybe, or you done it already?
Oh yeah, maybe later. Yes. Perfect. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it and found it valuable, we would really appreciate your support by liking, rating, subscribing to the Early Days podcast. This program is produced and hosted by Zulo, that's me and Julian. And as we mentioned in the very beginning, we make non-iron dresses from performance fabrics. If you want to learn more, head over to weardulo.com, that's weardulo.com, and take a look at our products, our story, and the journey of how we're building the business. Until next time, bye-bye.